So welcome to the podcast, everyone. Today we're going to be talking about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is a book. It's amazing. It's all the stories of the incarnations of Vishnu and Krishna. It's really interesting. So most of the stories that you hear that are super interesting and you're kind of like drawn into the characters come from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're going to look at the third canto and part four and chapter 27. And this is where Kapila Dev, which is an incarnation of Vishnu, is he starts basically becoming guru to his mother, Devahuti. And she's asking him how to become a yogi. So in this way, he really describes Sankhya, which is Sankhya is the difference between spirit and matter. And he does it with a bhakti flair. Bhakti is devotional service. So you have this very traditional view of yoga in the eight limbs. So you're going to hear like the yamas and the niyamas and the eight limbs of yoga. And that's going to be very clear. But it's going to have a little bit of a bhakti connection to it. So this is chapter 27. So it says, Kapila continued, when the living entity is thus affected by modes of material nature, because he or she is unchanging and does not claim proprietorship, he or she remains apart from the reaction of the modes, although abiding in a material body, just as the sun remains aloof from its reflection on the water. So here you have Kapila is speaking to his mother, giving, you know, basically a class on how to be a yogi. And you have, when the living entity is thus unaffected by the modes of material nature. So the modes of material nature, that's the gunas. So the gunas are basically very similar to yin and yang. So you have tamas, rajas, and sattva. So these are three words that you'll hear, tamas being kind of dark and laziness, and rajas being very passionate and kind of fiery, and sattvic being like purity. And we all have varying degrees of these qualities in us. Similar in Chinese medicine, they use yin yang to describe the material universes. Yin being cool and yang being warm, and yin being night and yang being day. So you can basically continually break down the material universe. So when a living entity is thus, when you're no longer affected by the gunas, and then he says, because he or she is unchanging and does not claim proprietorship. So to not claim proprietorship is basically the similar way of saying to be non-attached, to not claim stuff as your own. That's super tough. I mean, I think a lot of people, including myself, definitely you connect to who you are. Whether you think you're a certain gender or race or something like that. Like we take pride in that we are American, or there's like nationalistic pride, or even, you know, go as far as a sports team, you know, like, oh, I'm a Jets fan. Oh, I'm a Giants fan, right? It's kind of funny. But we, to really understand this is like to not claim proprietorship. I remember my teacher, Raghunath, he told me that when he would get a book, when he was a monk, he'd write in it in care of Raghunath rather than, you know, I remember when I was a kid, my dad used to make us write in everything, you know, write our names in it because we owned it. But here you have kind of that opposite theory because he didn't want to own anything. So, but he was in care of it. So I think, what a beautiful way to view things like that. like to be in care of something. What if I started to look at my relationships like that, or my relationship with my son, that I'm in care of him, and you know, that would take some of the claiming out of it, right? That I claim him as my own. Back to the book. He or she remains apart from the reactions of the modes. You remain apart from that reaction of the modes. That's cool. Although abiding in a material body, just as the sun remains aloof from its reflection on the water. So poetic. That you remain aloof, or the sun would remain, doesn't even know that it's reflecting off the water. It's beautiful. Back to the book. To the next sloka, text 2. When the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his or her body as the self, he becomes absorbed in material activities. And by the influence of false ego, he thinks the proprietorship is everything. So when the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, ahamkar, false ego. So it's basically, I've been under a spell. Like I felt like from material things, I would feel definitely driven by them. And I act like the worst version of myself because of these things that I'm under a spell, or that have me under a spell, things that are material in nature. And one of the analogies that I give, you know, car, like my mother, I remember when we were kids, she would get a new car. And when she would get this new car, it was like if an acorn fell on it, if something happened to it, it was like, you know, she was super triggered by this connection to the material object of the car. And it was like she was under a spell, because when she had her old car, she didn't care if an acorn fell on it. But now it's like all of a sudden, the world is falling apart because an acorn fell in a car. So when the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego. So the word they use for material nature is prakriti. So you have purusha and prakriti. These are two different words. Purusha meaning basically man or divinity even. And then prakriti being material energy. So when the soul is under the spell of prakriti and ahamkar is your false ego. Basically, you know, we all know when we're in kind of like an ego thing, it never feels right, you don't feel good. Identifying his or her body as the self, that's powerful. It's powerful. Because if you think about it, if you identify your body as yourself, it's a losing bet. It's a losing bet. Because what's going to happen is we're going to get old, we're going to die. And if you put all of your identity wrapped up in your material body, it's like we're setting ourselves up for failure, for sure. Because it's not going to make us feel good. He or she becomes absorbed in material activity. And by the influence of the false ego, he thinks that he is the proprietor of everything. So now we think that, like, the whole world revolves around me, right? One of my other teachers, Gauravani, he made the analogy of, if you don't think that this is what we tend to do, he said, just watch the next time you get in your car and you get into a little bit of a road rage thing. It's like everybody's doing it, right? Because you get like offended, and it's like your sense of entitlement when you're in your own car is huge. And everybody is having that. So we're all having this thing of every little thing gets under my skin that you do if you cut in front of me, if you go too slow, if you go too fast. But everybody's experiencing the same thing. And then we have these horrible incidences in our car, or we say horrible things to people that we would never say to them in public, or if they were in front of our face, but because we're in our cars, it's fine. So there's another book called The Lost Teachings of Yoga by Georg Forenstein, and he's awesome. That's one of my favorite books on yoga. And he equates this to like we're an actor that's taken our role home with us, kind of like Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. He's playing this character and he takes him home with him, and he doesn't break character for the month that he's on the movie. And it's very funny, you know, but it's like that. Or the analogy that I give sometimes is, it's like, let's say you're an accountant or whatever, but on Halloween you decide you're going to be a policeman. It's not like all of a sudden you become the policeman. And then you're like going and arresting people. Like you'd be like thought of as crazy. So in the yoga tradition, here we are. We claim proprietorship of our own body, and we think that that's who we are. And that's the sum of our parts, is our body. So then when our body breaks down, then we get very upset, and we cling to life like it's the only thing. And none of us are getting out of here alive. I mean, that's just the truth, and everybody knows it, but we don't address it. But in this shloka from the Bhagavatam, it's clear, saying, when the soul is under the spell of material nature, prakriti, and false ego, ahamkar, identifying his body as the self. So you identify that this is my body, but this is me. This is the only part of me. He or she becomes absorbed in material activities. And by the influence of the false ego, you think that you are the proprietor of everything. And then we get in our car, and we get pissed off because we think we are the center of the universe. It's quite profound. Next shloka. The conditioned soul, therefore, transmigrates in different species of life, higher and lower, because its association with the modes of material nature. Unless he is relieved of material activities, he has to accept this position because of his faulty work. The conditioned soul, therefore, transmigrates in different species of life. That's basically reincarnation, right? So reincarnation, you die and you come back, right? You might not come back as a human. You could come back as a dog or a cow or tree, something else. This is in the yoga tradition. Higher or lower. So you can go up or down. Because of his association with the modes, with the gunas, that's the sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic of material nature. Unless he is relieved of material activities, he has to accept this position because of his faulty work. So the faulty work is your karma. That's what they mean by work. So the word work means karma. Karma means work. Actually, a living entity is transcendental to material existence. So the soul, or you or I, we are beyond this material existence. But because of his mentality to lord it over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. And just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. So basically saying that we're in kind of a dream state here of the way we operate our life. And there are all these things that happen which are, you know, in our minds, disadvantages. Actually, the living entity is transcendental to material existence, meaning we're beyond this. But because of his mentality to lord it over material nature, I think that means because we want to be like, we want to claim proprietorship again and act like God, you know, with our material nature. His material existential condition does not cease. So our pain, our suffering just continues. And just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. I like this part. This is where he gives some, basically, how do we get off the wheel? One has to become faithful. I love that word, shraddha. Shraddha means faith. And then abhyas, beautiful Sanskrit words here. One has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to a platform of unalloyed devotional service by hearing stories of the Lord. Kata, kata means story. Like it's like the pastimes of the Lord. It's beautiful. One has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of yoga system. I was listening to a podcast and it was on discipline and how discipline actually leads to more freedom. In a very simple way, the idea of money, of being disciplined with your money, will then give you freedom to do what you actually want, which might be to go on vacation or take somebody out for a nice meal or open a business, you know, something like that. But you have to be disciplined with that money before you can have the money to do those things that may bring in more money. So sometimes people see the control system of yoga and they think, oh my goodness, they're trying to like control me in a way. But it's discipline. And the word there is yama, like pranayama, right? It's breath control. One has to become faithful by practicing the control process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by chanting and hearing stories of the Lord. Beautiful. If you've ever heard a story by anybody who's been able to tell it with some color, any story, any story can captivate you in just such a profound way. But stories of God and stories of spirituality, those are, I mean, for me, they hold a special place and they draw me right in. So, yeah. So this was the first, and we're going to see how we go and see what comes of this. Thanks for joining me. See you soon.